A musician with technical knowledge can play all the right notes. But one who cares enough to play from the heart gives music soul. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.
Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are doing well, staying safe wherever you are in the world. Very quickly, before I get Andy on here, I wanted to touch upon a couple of subjects about the stadium and about Roma's financial situation, just because I know some stories have emerged over the past week during this international break in regards to the club's financial health, and there's a lot of speculation. So just a couple of things I wanted to touch upon, again, in regards to that. Very quickly, though, a big thank you to our newest patrons over at Patreon. Mads, who you can find on Twitter at WWFTD, and also Tim Koppel, who you can find on Twitter at TheCoach, K-O-P-P. Thank you both for your support. It is greatly appreciated, because without you guys, our endeavors here are impossible. So thank you so much for your support. And again, if you want to get early access to the podcast, extra episodes of the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/RomaPress. Okay, so this past week has been filled with a lot of speculation, innuendo in regards to Roma, the financial situation, what it means, because we saw one of the bigger publications in regards to football and finance, they sort of highlighted Roma's financial losses from the 2019-2020 financial year, and there was a lot of speculation as to, did Friedkin expect this? What brought these huge financial losses? Why did these come about? So it's a very long-winded, complicated answer. It can be a bit boring. So I will try my best before I bring Andy on just to summarize it in the easiest way possible, just because, again, it's a very complicated answer with a lot of variables. But simply, I've discussed it on here a number of times along with Andy, that Roma, their biggest problem at the moment is a revenues issue. So yes, the debt is obviously a problem. However, with Friedkin's arrival, there's no doubt that they have the financial capacity to carry the debt, pay off the debt. They have a lot of flexibility as to how they plan on moving forward. However, none of us know what they plan on doing with this, because throughout the negotiations with Palotta, I tried my best. Now, again, Friedkin, notoriously quiet when it comes to the media. I tried every possible source that I knew that is even remotely connected to the Friedkins, just to get an idea as to what they planned on doing with this debt. Now, even during the negotiations with Palotta, we knew that the 2019-2020 financial year was going to be difficult, not only because of COVID, but again, Roma, they have a revenues issue. And this is something, if Dan Friedkin was sitting across from me and recording this podcast alongside me, that would probably be the first question that I ask him is, Mr. Friedkin, how do you improve the revenues of Roma? Because we've all seen the balance sheet. You can go to Roma's website. They publish all of this information. So you are more than happy to explore the most latest financial statements, ones from previous years. And under Palotta, they all have a very similar theme, and that is a revenues issue. Now, a lot of people like to just point to the stadium and say, okay, well, this is what Friedkin will be able to do. They'll be able to open the stadium and it will fix Roma's revenue problem. To a certain extent, I guess we could say that's true, but Roma need to improve in a lot of areas. Obviously, their match day revenue is one of them. Sponsorship is another one of them. We obviously know the player trading issue, how large some of Roma's players are earning, especially ones who are essentially redundant and aren't playing in the team at the moment. Javier Pastore, Juan Jesus, Fazio. We could go on and on and on. We understand the story. So there are multiple levels as to what the issues are with Roma. So they're spending a lot and they're not making enough. So I don't know how Friedkin makes up this deficit. Now, someone did send me an email before we were recording this, and they were asking if Friedkin just decided today that he wanted to pay off all of Roma's debt, would UEFA allow that under their financial fair play regulations? And yes, they would. They would allow Roma to wipe out the debt and move forward in however they see fit. However, with financial fair play, the whole point of it is you are operating in accordance with your revenues and your losses. So essentially, the whole point of financial fair play is to ensure that clubs are not operating outside of their means. So even if Friedkin were to wipe out the debt in the next hour, Roma would still have this issue of the revenues. That is something they have to resolve. So the debt necessarily is not my biggest concern with Roma. I want to know how Friedkin plans on making Roma more money. And it's as simple as that, because I don't think the answer is simply, oh, we build a stadium and that's it. There's just no way, if you analyze the balance sheet of Roma, that you could come to that conclusion. It's just not that straightforward. So again, I don't have that answer. I would love to hear Friedkin's feedback in regards to that, because I don't know what the hidden revenue streams may be. Now, could it be improving areas in which Roma are suffering currently? Again, I'm sort of pointing to the wage bill. That's probably one of the easier ones to point out. Yes, they can absolutely try and lower their costs, but again, it all comes back to revenues. So I wish I had a clearer answer, or a better answer, I should say, but only Friedkin can answer that. Only he can answer that. And then I guess the other sort of theme I saw throughout the last week was I saw some articles stating that Friedkin was surprised by the number of losses. They didn't expect it, which is obviously incorrect. Of course, Friedkin knew well before the purchase was official with Palalta that the club would be incurring very high-level losses in this financial year again. That has to do with COVID. That has to do with Roma, again, lacking in revenue streams. So no, Friedkin was not taken by surprise when it was revealed last week that the club lost a record 204 million euros this past financial year. So hopefully that clears at least some of the speculation that we've seen throughout the last week up. Friedkin is going to fix this. I have no doubts about that. They do have a plan in place. I don't think it's time for panic, because before last year, and even before the arrival of Monchi, Roma were slowly starting to work their way out of this debt situation that they currently find themselves in. But then the arrival of Monchi, you have the COVID crisis throughout the world, and all of that just sort of exacerbated the problem. And just when it looked like they were close to getting their head above water, they find themselves in the situation that they're in now. So again, I don't know how Friedkin plans on fixing this revenue problem. I'm curious to see what they have in store for the club, but I trust them. Again, you do not make an acquisition of this level without having strong financial backing and a very sound plan in place to fix things. So we'll just have to wait and see. I know that's a terrible answer in the end, but they are so close to the vest and secretive in the way they operate that it's really difficult to gain any insight as to what they might have in store. So let me bring Andy on now. He and I discuss the recent eye-opening interview of Gianluca Petrarchi, the former sporting director of Roma. If you want, you can go to the website, check it out. It was published on the 2nd of October. You'll find it there. So let me bring Andy on now. He and I discuss again the interview of Petrarchi, as well as the sporting director situation and search at Roma. Okay, Andy, I have been so eager to discuss this because Gianluca Petrarchi, he gave a pretty extensive interview a couple of weeks ago. And in this interview, he pretty much unloaded on just about everybody involved with Roma following his sacking early in the summer. It was June, I believe, when Roma officially sacked him. He went on Radio, which is the perfect radio station for this sort of interview. And
perfect platform,
The perfect platform for this kind of interview. And again, he spared nobody. He went after players. He went after Palalta. He went after the club. Now, if you don't know what I'm referring to, this was like a 20 to 30 minutes long interview, so I only translated a part of it, but it was published on the 2nd of October on Roma Press. So you can find it there, and you'll know what we're referring to here. Andy, I think it highlights, or highlighted, because Palalta is now present, past tense, I think it highlighted a number of problems that I think even just your average supporter probably would have been able to point out to you, yeah?
Yeah, this is, you know, it, and it reads like a novel. It's, you know, it has those sensationalist elements that, again, work so well on a platform like Radio. And it's, you know, and I read it now. And there are things that make sense. And I was one of the few people who one of the first ones to say that I would be disappointed if Petrachi decided to leave or, you know, was evidently then sacked. I would be disappointed, and I was disappointed because I hate when you start something and you barely get into it and you immediately quit. And obviously this is, you know, as Petrachi describes it, this is the result of two parties that could not find an agreement, him being the victim, Roma, and more specifically Pallotta, and somebody else being the perpetrator. So I understand that. And there are things that make sense. There are, you know, he addresses some of the dysfunction that we've been hearing about for a number of years. He addresses, you know, the people that like to talk. He addresses the friends of journalists, you know, the people that enjoy having a cup of coffee.
He loves that reference because I believe he said that in one of the press conferences, and our good friend Filippo Biafora had a go at him. He said something, right? Remember, wasn't that the one where Petrachi named a bunch of websites and newspapers for publishing
and then
lines
had to apologize for mentioning Tempo?
Because Filippo rightly took exception. But in that press conference, Petrachi said, people like to have a go at me because I don't go to a cafe and have a cappuccino with them, so they write these things about me. Come on,
because,
man.
Because I'm omertoso, sono omertoso, which is obvious. So, yeah, I, you know, and it reads like that. It reads like a guy who's read one too many Godfather novels.
Yes.
But it's okay. It makes sense, you know. There is always bitterness. I guess someone like Monchi decided to keep quiet because I think he, you know, the conclusion is that he wasn't as much of a victim of that system as one of the many reasons for that dysfunction. And Petrachi instead seems like a guy who wanted to be part of something important at Roma. This was his chance to sort of elevate himself from a club like Torino and you know, go to a bigger stage, you know, a club that plays in Europe on the European stage, and a club that deals with, you know, more expensive players, a club that wanted to start over after that negative experience with Monchi, Di Francesco, and that bitter conclusion to that affair. Well, then you fast forward now, and it puts things into perspective. So, makes sense. There are some interesting things. I found that, you know, how open he was, extremely open about that part about people talking to journalists.
Yes.
And, you know, I am reminded of when Conte and Spalletti at Inter, for example, they recently, and for a number of years now, because since Spalletti was there, so what, 2, 3, 4 years even, almost, it was about, they talked about a possible, you know, a possible snitch.
Yes.
Without, they were talking about somebody talking, but from the locker room, they were talking about a player, somebody in the locker room talking to journalists and talking about the unease in the locker room, the unease in the club. But here, Petrachi evidently says the players were okay. You know, sometimes I would get rough with some of them. He talked about, you know, about setting the record straight with Zaniolo, setting the record straight with Ibanez, one of his latest deals or one of his last deals that made sense and I think is working out great. But overall, his argument is the players were great. We had a bond. We believed in each other. We believed in what we were doing. I don't think he had issues with Fonseca to the extent that everybody made it out to sound like. He clearly points fingers at the top dogs, yes. The big dogs in the management, the people. You know, it's pretty evident that you have the names. You have Baldissoni, you have Fienga, you have Zubiria, you have so many other people that we even don't know really what their role is, but they talk. And it's pretty clear because time after time we get these details about the transfer market, we get these details about, you know, Fonseca being on the chopping block and Allegri being considered, you know, as an option and so on and so on. Those things don't come out, you know, just like that. There has to be someone talking. And I thought that Petrachi did pretty well to address that.
Well, we got a minute. I'm going to buy that truck I've been wanting.
Wait, don't you need like weeks to shop for a car?
I don't. Carvana makes it super convenient to find exactly what I want.
Hold up. You're buying a car on your phone? Isn't that more of a laptop thing?
You can shop wherever you want.
I like to do my research, read reviews, compare models. Plus, Carvana has thousands of options. How'd you decide on that truck?
Because I like it.
Oh, that is a great reason.
Go to Carvana.com to sell your car the convenient way.
Aspect.
Another thing that I found probably most interesting was when he talked about January. So he was talking about how we brought some names in. We tried to revitalize the team in January. He's, of course, talking about Ibanez, Perez, and VR. The part that I found most interesting is he talks about two or three names, and he doesn't name the players by name. He references he had two or three deals in place to sell players in January. However, they ultimately turned down the moves away from the club. And This is where the speculation really ramped up after this interview came out. So the two or three names that he was referencing.
Juan Jesus,
Diego Perotti, and it has to be Pastore, right? The last one?
Yeah.
It has to be.
I think it's a toss-up between Pastore and Fazio, but I'm more leaning to Pastore. He was still okay at that point in the season. It didn't look like he was going to become... the not so resurrected victim of injuries.
He basically said that these two to three failed transfers affected greatly what he was able to do in January. So I don't know what the thinking was with Palotta in this. Now, if it is true that on Christmas that Petrachi sends Palotta a message and Palotta ghosts him, essentially...
But in Italian, even it says that he sent him a gift.
A gift. I would love, he says he doesn't speak English well. And for those of you who don't know, Petrachi is from Lecce. For people who haven't been to Lecce, I don't even consider that Italian that they're speaking. It's more of a...
It's a sound.
It's a sound. They have to... it's not even words. Lecce has to be the only place where I cannot understand anything coming from the mouth of just about anybody who resides there. So,
and that's probably what Palotta said to himself as he opened the gift card.
That sort of goes to my point. That goes to my point. So... Palotta's probably sitting there like, what's he saying to me now?
Is this a time bomb?
He probably thought he was getting one of those spam emails from somebody. You know, I have $1 million here. I just need you to wire me some money. It is interesting, though, that if that was the approach Palotta took, it is interesting, and I only say that for a couple of reasons. Do we remember what happened for Petrachi to even arrive at Roma? This is a guy who... Roma essentially had to give compensation to Torino because Petrachi was, even though he denied it, we have him on camera at Fiumicino arriving in May of 2019, which is a month before his contract.
After talking with Fonseca.
Exactly. Let's not forget, Eddie, Roma had to pay money and they gave Torino two Primavera players.
And Torino don't want anything to do with Roma.
Exactly.
The doors are closed for any kind of transfer.
Yes. Exactly. And Roma essentially compromised any future transfer operations with Torino in order to bring Petrarca to the club. So I find it difficult to believe. Now, again, we're only getting one side of this story. Peralta, again, Jim, open invitation. Come on. You, whatever you want to say to respond to Petrarca, you are more than welcome on here. So we are only getting one side of the story, Andy. But I do find it difficult to believe that given the price Roma had to pay to bring Petrarca to the club, I find it difficult to believe that they would go to this level to essentially sabotage their sporting director that they paid a heavy price to bring.
Yes, but at the same time, you know, you look at the timeline of events and what he says, there must be some truth because he addresses that winter, the start, you know, the winter season.
Which is when things start heating up with Friedkin too, by the way.
That's where the Roma that we saw right before Christmas against Fiorentina, that Roma is gone. After that, we don't see that Roma anymore. We see not even a semblance of a team. We see a Roma that is fragmented, a Roma that is mentally vulnerable. There is no way that Fonseca can change things around. He starts to make really important mistakes. He starts to lose the locker room, it seems. And then those reports of Petrarca getting into it after the Sassuolo game, or all of that starts to surface, and that's where things get lost along the way, and it seemed like it was a point of no return. We get a confirmation here that Petrarca. It's easy to, again, as you said, you have one party speaking in this case. And I think that sometimes clearly he exaggerates. But I can understand that he was one of the numerous victims of these circumstances. And I guess that's what you get for trying to start over without changing the backbone. If you have the same people up there, if you have the same people running the show, then how do you expect to, you just can't expect everybody to be the same puppet, you know? You can't expect everybody to come in and stick to those same rules that clearly did not work before that person came over. I thought when we sat here and we talked about Petrarca's arrival and Fonseca and everything, we had the impression that this was, the ship was sailing into another direction after the misfire of Monchi and Di Francesco and then having Ranieri come over and sort of save the season, but not really because he didn't get Champions League. That was just an impression because, again, it turns out people talking, people maneuvering behind somebody's back were still there. And I guess that's not fair, and that is impossible for anybody to really settle in and do a proper job. And I think that, as much as he likes to talk about professionalism, Petrarca, yes, he was certainly somebody who was all business, who came here with a clear plan, with a clear personal agenda to improve his own work, but also help a struggling club, but in a difficult moment to sort of regain momentum and sort of get back to where it used to be 3 to 4 years ago.
Andy, I have to say, though, one of the things about the interview that I didn't like was he was really trying to paint himself as this martyr who was victimized by the ambiente that we discuss so often of Rome. He says there's quite a sick system in place in Rome where everybody thinks they have news. And this is where he starts referring to the journalist. He said, "So I had to put a stop to this hemorrhaging. Everywhere I worked, I've never spoken to journalists off the record or met with them for a cup of coffee. I've always been quiet and calm in press conferences. Perhaps I said a few bad words at times, but it was easier to bring me down because the entire system wanted Petrarca gone." Come on,
nobody wanted that. Conspiracy thriller.
But come on, I mean, yes, okay, are journalists going to get annoyed with you if you don't leak them information? Of course they're going to get annoyed, But come on, yeah, he makes it seem like, and I hate this too, because Capello does this all the time. He never misses an opportunity. He makes it seem like in Rome that this is the only place where this happens, that it doesn't happen anywhere else in the world, that this is only something that happens in Rome. If you're with one of the websites, the newspapers, if you don't give them information, they're just going to try and bring you down. Give me a break. That's not what happened, okay? Yes, people got mad that right. and annoyed that you wouldn't leak them stuff, particularly when you came in for a guy like Monchi who would leak to anybody. Come on, nobody was out to get him. I just don't like the conspiracy theory stuff.
No, I agree. I agree. I was just saying that he probably didn't expect it to happen just because it doesn't happen with that sort of magnitude in a place like Torino. If you are a sporting director for Torino, I mean, not many people follow Torino on a national level. There are different circumstances, you know, and it's a different thing here. Petrachi, I'm not arguing that he doesn't get burned because of journalists. He gets burned because of management.
Yes.
You know, that's, he makes it seem to be like he was the victim of two factions hard at work to undermine his work. And in fact, what he's really getting at, I believe, is people from the top sort of betraying him, because it's not, you know, it's not as much the journalists, right? It is the people that talk to those journalists, and that's about it. It's really, this was, you know, it's a fascinating interview because it sort of gives you an insight into what we could have imagined happened in that period of time, where really Roma went from getting what 35 points and looking like, you know, they could contend with the likes of Atalanta. To a team that was getting blasted by bottom table teams, and it just didn't make sense. Now we know that there were deals in place, didn't get done. I guess that creates also locker room dysfunction. I mean, you have guys, well liked guys like Perotti or Juan Jesus, who suddenly realize that they're not important anymore. That this is for real. That, you know, they Fonseca is not going to play them. Fonseca is going to, any chance he gets, he's going to tell Juan Jesus to go screw himself. And that's about it. But I guess that has, you know, repercussions. And within this team, you know, we've seen anything. I mean, this team is so mentally fragile. It's so easily, unsettled. That it was bound to happen. And with a guy like Petrachi, who, you know, just from the press conferences, you had the impression of him being a pit bull. I mean, a guy who, you know, would come home and bite into a piece of wood instead of some pasta. It was inevitable. I mean, this was, you know, this guy is unstoppable. I'm curious to see, because in the interview he said, oh, would I return to Roma? Of course. Yeah, of course I would consider it. But I also have some offers on the table. There is an offer on the table right now, which I'm considering. I'm really curious where he goes now, because as much as I liked some of the things he did, I have a hard time imagining him going to a place like Roma, to a team of Roma's, you know, stature, if you can call it stature, I guess pedigree, whatever. I'm not talking about winning mentality, but I'm talking to a team that, you know, is considerably higher in the table or in the standings and in the financial aspects than a team like Torino or a team like Parma. That's because this guy is clearly not an easy guy to go get along with. He has a vision, he has the work ethic, but if you don't have the attitude to sort of persist and get along, then it's always gonna come back to bite you.
Well, if we really wanted to get deep into the who was leaking stuff and who was, I guess, sabotaging Petrachi from the management side, that guy left a couple of weeks ago. I'm referring to Baldissoni, but I'm in a good mood, so I don't want to get too deep into that, just because he doesn't like me. I don't like him. But again, I'm in a good mood, so we won't go there. We just won't touch upon that subject. But real quickly, before we leave, the sporting director. Do you have a preference as to who the new sporting director would be? And I'm only bringing this up because I've had two separate agents tell me that Michael Emenalo, the former Monaco and Chelsea director, is emerging as among the favorites to be the next sporting director of Roma. Now, I did speak with one of Friedkin's lawyers last month in regards to the sporting director position, and he informed me that Emenalo is not among the favorites to take over the role that was left vacant by Petrarca. Now, we continue to hear the usual suspects, right, Andy? Rangnick, Luis Campos, Juve's Paratici. For me, I think it's going to be a name that hasn't really emerged yet. I think it's going to be more of a surprise. I think it's going to be someone who is under the radar. I don't think that it is going to be Emenalo, Paratici, or even Rangnick, who I think unfairly, Andy, is being sort of labeled as this next Monchi 2.0. Now, again, I don't think it is going to be him who ultimately lands the role. But as far as Rangnick goes, how do you feel about him being labeled as this sort of German Monchi?
Oh, come on. Listen. To me, that is, you know, it's, I can understand there is some frustration. There is some worrying of, you know, of giving the keys to the whole shebang to somebody that comes from the outside, has a big reputation, you know, for building a system, for handling everything, for overseeing everything. Yes, when Monchi came here, Pallotta gave him the keys, and Monchi disappointed. But it doesn't mean that now, after Monchi, you cannot bet on little known players, on players from minor leagues, on, you know, there is a whole breed of players that will still be coming to Roma. It's not like from day to day we're just gonna ignore a whole portion of players from the world of football, right, just because Monchi right. was here, and that's about it. No, and I understand you're afraid to sort of give the whole responsibility to one guy. At the same time, you know, I think it could work, something like Rangnick. Definitely, listen, if I have to choose, I definitely would prefer somebody like Rangnick than somebody like Paratici, because Paratici is being linked because of him knowing Allegri and Allegri being close with him and all that. But my hopes for getting Allegri are very slim. I don't believe in it. Doesn't matter who says what. It's just a personal thing. I don't fall for it right now. And without Allegri, I don't see in Paratici the guy you need. At the same time, you saw what Petrarca did. I thought that, you know, all things considered, for a small-time sporting director, for somebody who managed Torino, that was a pretty good year. And that makes you think, you know, whether you really need a big time sporting director with the pedigree of, you know, of winning trophies, of building a winning team, of utilizing, you know, youth players that then go on to become star players. I would love to see a Roma that relies on young players, that relies on people who cost very little, who then have tremendous upside, who have incredible untapped potential. That's fantastic, and I would love to see that. At the same time, somebody like Petrarca gives me a hint that you never know. If a random name comes up, if somebody come a name from a minor team, I don't know whether it is from Serie A or Germany or France, it doesn't really say much right now. Everything is mixed because we went from having the supposedly greatest sporting director in the world failing miserably to Gianluca Petrarca, who managed Torino, that it was a team, you know, that wandered and meandered around the 10th place, right, 14th, right. 13th, whatever, that sort of place in the standings. to having, you know, reaching good results. I mean, building a team that providing us with interesting talents, with players that were, you know, cost little, relatively little compared to what we paid before that. So that, you know, it's, I think this now it's become more complicated to make these sort of judgments. I can understand there are worries. I can understand there are extremely high hopes. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's a relatively unknown name.
Oh, I completely agree with you, Andy. I don't think that it is going to be the usual names that we have been hearing throughout the past 2 months. I really don't. Now, there was something with Paratici. Obviously, that has been the name that has been out there beyond the 2 months, only because, as you alluded to, yes, he has a relationship with Allegri, also very close with Roma CEO Guido Fienga. So I do think he is certainly under consideration, but I don't think he's going to leave Juve. I really, really don't. So I think this is going to be someone who we didn't expect. I think it's going to be more of a, not so much a flashy name, I guess we could say. I think this is going to be someone more under the radar that hasn't emerged yet. So that is my guess. I still believe that a new sporting director will arrive within the month of October, but we will see. They certainly have to get this done before the winter market opens. So I can't imagine that they delay this much further. So that is where we are going to leave it, everybody. Let us know who you would prefer the new sporting director of Roma to be. Very curious to hear your feedback in regards to that. So we will be back in a couple of days here ahead of the match against Benevento, as this is the point where Roma's schedule really starts to pick up. Obviously, we have the commencement of the Europa League as well. So a lot more football. We will be there every step along the way with you. So again, thank you for joining us. If you could, please leave us a review. That also helps us immensely. So thank you again for listening. Thank you for your support. We will talk to you in a couple of days. So until then, ciao.
Ciao.
A coach who knows the game can teach their team how to improve. But one who genuinely cares about each player,
you have what it takes. We got this.
Can inspire them to win. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit Truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.